for the first time in months. All his own shortcomings were buried now, overwhelmed by the crimes of his enemy, the risen Emperor. "Hobbs," he signaled. "Captain?" She sounded half asleep. "Meet me at Rana Harta's cabin." "Sir?" "In 5 minutes, bring your weapon." Executive officer. Catherine Hobbs fastened the seals of her tunic as she ran. She stopped around the corner from her goal and checked the time. She had 50 seconds left. Her eyes scanned the black wool of her uniform, checking for imperfections. She pulled up one sleeve to reveal the Flechette pistol. Its ammo meter read full, but Hobbs popped the cover to check the needles with her own eyes. The darts were nestled in their twin magazines, as perfectly aligned as two ranks of tiny metal soldiers. She walked briskly and calmly around the corner. Zai awaited her with a grim expression. "Captain, what is it?"
"We've been betrayed, Hobbs."
"Mutiny again?" She took a deep breath against panic, drew her pistol.
"Not by our crew, Hobbs," her captain said.
She blinked. What was he saying?
"Just hand me that."
He pointed at the pistol.
What?
She thought. The captain could draw his own weapon from stores. But of course that would raise any number of flags with the politicals aboard the ship. Hobbs handed him the weapon silently. The captain held the Flechette pistol behind his back and opened the door to the dead woman's cabin. Light spilled between Hobbs and Zai into Rana Harta's dim antechamber. The dead adept Trevum herself was here, kneeling with her back to them, her hands working gestural commands.
"Forgive me, honored mother," Zai said.
End of side 6. To continue, change side selector switch and turn the cassette over. Side 7, The Killing of Worlds by Scott Westerfeld. Continuing on page 285. He shot Trevum with a spray of needles, cutting an X across her heart. Hobbs gasped, her knees weak. This must be a dream, she thought.
"A symbiont should rise from that," Zai said.
He turned to Hobbs.
"What was she doing?" he demanded.
Hobbs forced herself to concentrate, probing the Lynx's diagnostics. The Adept's actions were officially hidden from Navy AI, but there were always indirect signs. The translite grid was cycling out of a transmission.
"It looks as if she sent a message, sir."
"Did I interrupt her?" Hobbs shook her head. "It's stepping down in an orderly way, Captain. She was finished, and the main entanglement grid shows depletion."
"Home," he said.
She nodded.
"Damn.
Shut it down, Hobbs. The whole grid. Cut its power." She swallowed and signaled the comm staff to perform the task. This was one trump card the captain held. The apparatus might have a writ of authority, but the crew of the Lynx could still disable the frigate's components by hand. The captain opened the inner door of the antechamber, holding the pistol ready.
"Rana Harta," he called.
Was I going to murder the woman? Hobbs wondered. The Adept would reanimate easily from her heart wound, but a shot like that to the head could destroy a risen permanently. The dead woman stepped from the darkness, blinking in the light. She was small, her hair shorn like the Rixwoman's. Though she was shorter than the commando, Hobbs could see how their faces were alike. The Legius authorities believed that Rana had been chosen from the militia's population for her resemblance to Herd, and perhaps for a savant ability to process chaotic data. Hobbs wondered to what uses the compound mind had put Rana's intellect and what traces captivity had left in the dead woman before her.
"Please come with me, honored one," Zai said.
Harta nodded quiescently. She had none of the usual hauteur of the dead. Lawrence Zai went ahead, with Rana after him. Hobbs brought up the rear, reminding herself that this was real. They reached the Rixwoman's cell in a few minutes. The gunfire and Adept Trevum's medical monitors had triggered various alarms aboard the ship, but Hobbs had managed to suppress them as far as she knew. There was a single marine guard, not the familiar Basirits, and one of the lower-ranking politicals on station. The man was living, and Captain Zai shot him in the leg and kicked him in the head as he fell. The aspirant dropped to the floor unconscious. Zai sternly ordered the startled guard to return to attention. The private froze in shock for a moment, then obeyed as crisply as if at parade drill. Zai's tone of command was stronger than Hobbs had heard it in some time. The sound thrilled her, however bizarre these proceedings. Her fingers flickered, moving to quell the new alarms. The remaining politicals must already know that something was happening.
"Shall I get a fire team up here, Captain?"
"Good idea, Hobbs. That fast private for one." She nodded, sent commands. "Secure this area, Private," she ordered the motionless Marine. Hobbs opened the cell, turning the screw lock and bracing one leg to pull out the massive door. Zai moved to enter first. "The shock collar remote, sir," she called. "We won't need it." Hobbs followed him closely, wishing that she had another weapon. Straitjacket or no, the Rix commando could probably kill them both easily. She doubted that a half-expended clip of flechettes would even marginally slow down a Rix soldier. The prisoner stared at them coolly, a hungry look in her eyes. Hobbs felt naked under her hunter's gaze. But then Rana Harta followed them through the door, and for a moment Herd seemed utterly human. "Rana," she said, stepping forward. The dead woman walked toward her former captor and lover. The Rix woman was in for a disappointment, Hobbs thought. The honored dead never held fast to the emotional bonds of their former lives. The transition of the symbiont left them altogether indifferent to the prattle of the living. Hobbs had encountered many of her dead shipmates after their reanimation. They were no longer friends or even crewmates, just passengers. But Rana Harta looked tenderly at the Rix woman and smiled. The expression startled Hobbs. It looked exaggerated on that cold gray face, like a clown's painted joy. The dead woman embraced Herd, wrapping her arms around the hypercarbon straitjacket, and the two kissed as unself-consciously as adolescents on a utopian world. The captain and Hobbs just watched, too surprised and respectful of the dead to interrupt. Finally, they separated, pulling apart to gaze into each other's eyes. "Rana," murmured Herd quietly. The dead woman spoke in return. Hobbs recognized the buzzing syllables of Rick's battle language in her speech. "Preserve us," she murmured. A risen woman, one of the honored dead of the Empire, speaking Rix. What had Rana Harta become? "Herd," Captain Zai said in a level voice, "I've come for information." The commando kissed Rana Harta once more before answering and whispered at the edge of Hobbs's hearing. "Your lips are as cold as mine now." Kathary swallowed, wondering again if this was a dream. Herd turned from her lover and looked at Captain Zai. "So you want to hear the Emperor's secret now?" He nodded, then said, "I will hear it," with the measured formality of an oath in military court. Herd cocked her head as if listening to some internal voice. Then she smiled, a predatory expression that chilled Hobbs's soul. "It will not make you happy, Vaden." Zai met her gaze without flinching. He reached back and pulled the door shut behind them. With the heavy metal in place, even the inescapable hum of the ship was silenced. They were absolutely cut off from the rest of the Lynx now. "Tell us," Zai said. The Rix woman took a breath, then she began. "Your Empress was killed not by us, but by the apparatus." "Of course," whispered Hobbs to herself. The records of the battle had suggested as much. The Emperor was a murderer. "But that fact is not the secret that concerns you, Zai," Herd added. "Alexander was inside the Empress before she died, through the agency of a machine that was within her body." "The Confidant," Captain Zai said. "Exactly. Alexander took control of this machine, like every other on Legis, and could see inside the Empress. Alexander saw something." As the commando went on, her flat voice became almost sing-song, as if she were telling a children's tale. She leaned her head against Rana Harta's shoulder, and the dead woman stroked Herd's bound arms. The story took 15 slow minutes. Hobbs had known that her bond to the Grey World was broken, by the false error of blood, by the Lynx's travails, and now finally by Zai's inescapable treasons, but the Rix woman's words were something altogether different. They left her captain retching on the floor, unraveled centuries of the history she had been taught, and tore Hobbs's last convictions from her like a swallowed hook dragged from a fish's gut. And after that, everything was different. Senator. Awaiting the closure of the Emperor's trap, Nara Oxum was very careful. She knew instinctively that it was only a matter of time before the apparatus uncovered her communication with Zai. Perhaps they already had, and were merely waiting for an opportune moment to move against her. After a few nervous nights at home, she decided to sleep in her office, remaining within the safety of the Rubicon Pale. As a rule, a senator could not disappear suddenly without explanation, but a case of wartime treason might convince the apparatus that it could make an exception. When the trap closed, it did so quickly. The news swept through the capital's infrastructure quickly, a fire rampant in pure oxygen. It started as a newsfeed rumor, well-traveled but patently incredible. Then supporting evidence was released. Images of Oxum and Zai meeting at the Emperor's party 10 years ago. The repeater path of her first message to him. A timeline of the War Council's agenda, the debates for which the 100-year rule had been invoked, covered with a broad swath of black. And finally her voice, dictating the first few words of her warning to Zai. This last synthesized for dramatic effect. Across the wee hours of morning, the treason of Senator Nara Oxum moved from the back pages of gossips and conspiracy theorists to blaring headlines crawling the periphery of every channel of second sight. The news feeds were forbidden even to speculate about what secrets the senator had revealed to her warrior lover, but the 100-year rule itself bore the weight of proof. This young and headstrong senator had betrayed the Emperor's trust. The morning that the story broke, the psychic frenzy itself awoke her, the growing fury of the city bleeding into her head like a wake-up alarm invading a sleeper's dreams. For a moment of unprotected madness, Nara could see the bloated body of the capital convulsing, the beached whale shaking off carrion birds with some grotesque after-death spasm. And before wheeling back to feast on the war economy, the scavengers swirled toward a new target. The treasonous senator. Live prey. The empathic vision waned in power. Senator Oxum could feel her own body and a hand at her wrist, someone adjusting her apathy bracelet. She opened her eyes, furious at this presumption. It was a grim-faced Roger Niles kneeling next to her. She blinked once. The dose was strong, and Oxum's mind became coherent in seconds. She instantly understood what had happened. She'd been expecting it. This was the trap the Emperor had set. She had walked into it full knowing. "What have you done, Nara?" Niles asked. Oxum put both hands to her face, rubbing it to confirm the reality of her body. She pulled herself up into a seated position. Her back ached in the particular way that always resulted from sleeping on her office couch. "I can't tell you much about it, Roger. The 100-year rule." He scowled. "Now you want to obey the law." "I had to tell Laurent what the Emperor planned. I knew they'd catch me, but I had to save him. That's all I can say." "They're calling for your blood, Nara." "I know, Roger. I can hear them." She gestured to bring up second sight. Synesthesia confirmed what Roger Niles and empathy had told her. The story choked every news feed. She flipped across a few channels. Her voice and picture, the text of a useless apparatus warrant for her arrest, a loyalist spokesperson demanding her expulsion from the Senate. Expulsion was the crux of the matter, she realized. Stripped of senatorial privilege, Nara Oxum would be just another citizen, just another traitor with no pale to protect her. "I warned you, Nara. Why didn't you listen?" "Can they throw me out, Roger?"
"Of the Senate? There's precedent, but it hasn't been done for 150 years.
"What was the reason back then?" Niles blinked, his fingers twitching.
"Murder. A utopian killed her lover, strangled him in bed."
Oxum smiled wanly. She, at least, had broken the law to save a lover, not kill one. "That's far more dramatic," she said.
"But it wasn't even a crime against the state," Niles said. "Conduct unbecoming" was the phrase employed in the writ of expulsion. "A lesser charge than treason, I dare say."
"How long did it take?" she asked.
47 days. They held a trial before the full Senate. Witnesses, defense counsel, even a psychologist.
"And then they expelled her?"
Niles nodded. "And with her privilege gone, a civilian court found her guilty of murder in a second trial. Loss of elevation, life internment."
"Better than exsanguination."
"God, Nara," Niles said, his voice breaking. "Did you actually do it? Reveal War Council secrets to Zai?"
"I did, to save him."
"There must be an exception for military exigency."
She shook her head. "There's no way out of it, Roger. It was pure treason. My lover over my sovereign. I made a choice." Niles was silent for a moment, going into a data fugue. He stood over her, hands flexing as he tried to discover some exception to the 100-year rule, his entire body flinching with the effort. He looked like a hand-eye gamer trying to escape some virtual maze, his face showing frustration at every roadblock and dead end. Nara drifted back into second sight news feeds. One showed a crowd gathered at the edge of the pale, a loyalist mob demanding that Oxum abdicate her privilege immediately and face a court imperial. Now that she was its target, The loyalists wanted righteous anger seemed less comical. On another feed was the secularist party whip, a young man who had replaced her after she'd been promoted to the war council. He was calling for calm, stalling, trying to slow down the pace of events without appearing to support rank treason. She didn't envy him the job. In the midst of this maelstrom, Nara felt oddly peaceful. The usual players of political drama, the political parties, the apparatus's propaganda machine, the newsfeed hacks, had jumped into motion in the usual way, jostling for advantage, working damage control. She could feel the shifting ground in this contest for power, the tug of every carefully chosen word, every deliberately sculpted reading of imperial law and Senate tradition. But at the center of this chaos was one immovable point, the rightness of her own choice. Nara Oxum felt purified by treason. After all her compromises, she had finally done something for a simple, unalloyed reason, no matter what the cost. "I'm free, Roger." His eyes snapped open. "What?" "We can't fight the Emperor with pragmatism forever." Niles shook his head hard. A few gray hairs jutted out as a result. His features seemed to be aging by the minute. "This was not the time, Nara. There's a war on." She understood his point. The Emperor was always at the peak of his power when defending the realm. But the argument cut both ways. At its peak was when power was most often abused. "I'm going to tell the whole Risen Empire what I told Zai," she said. "The Emperor's plans for Legius." Niles looked down at her in despair. "They'll kill you," he whispered. "Let them. Use whatever you know as leverage to bargain your way out." She shook her head. There would be no escape for her. The Emperor would make sure of that. "Nara, they'll drain your blood out drop by drop. Not before I turn a generation against him." Niles swallowed. He was still looking, she knew, for a way out of this. Senator Oxum suddenly saw her old counselor's greatest limitation. However pure his hatred for the dead, Niles had always fought them cautiously, slowly laying his plans against them. He had no taste for drama. "How old are you, Roger?" "Damn old," he said. "Old enough to know how to stay alive." "That's your problem. War requires sacrifice sometimes." "You're talking about suicide, Nara." She nodded. "That's correct, Roger. A just and well-considered suicide." Her counselor sat down next to her, deflated. She was shocked to see tears on his face. "I spent 3 decades bringing you here, Senator," he said, and sobbed once. "I know. And this is how you repay me." After a moment's silence, she knew the answer. "Yes, absolutely." They were quiet for a while. Oxum shut off her second sight, quenching the flow of opinion and grandstanding, the headlong rush to committees, hearings, and judgment, all the unwieldy maneuvers of a legislature turning on one of its own. The rising sun lanced into the crystals that had been carefully moved here from Niles's old office. Like a tree of tiny mirrors, they dappled the walls with a glimmering pattern. Nara Oxum listened to Niles's labored breathing and wished she could spare him this. She still needed his counsel. She hoped he wouldn't give up on her. As if hearing her thoughts, the old man spread his hands and said, "What do you want me to do, Senator?" She took hold of his arm. "Delay them for a while, then agree to a trial. No witnesses to testify for me except myself, with the broadest possible public newsfeed." He frowned, concentration replacing despair on his face. "They'll try to silence you, Senator. Secrets of the realm." "They can't sequester the whole Senate, Roger, and no lesser body can vote to expel me." His eyes narrowed. Now that his mind had something to chew on, a sparkle grew in them. "I suppose not, Senator. And I have the right to speak at my own trial." He nodded. "Of course. Even the 100-year rule doesn't stand against privilege. They can't truly silence you until after the Senate has expelled you officially." "Now that I've chosen death, my options multiply," she said. Nara considered her own words. She could appear at the edge of the pale right now and address the hovering cameras of the news feeds, telling them what the Emperor had planned to do on Legius. But the news feeds would be bound by the 100-year rule. Her only shot at revealing the Sovereign's plan would be before the Senate. "I'll wait for the trial to say my piece, when the whole Empire is watching," The apparatus will bury your words.
Nara looked at Niles and nodded. Then we'll have to devise a backup plan, a way to publicize a speech if I'm silenced. Something a bit illegal, like we used to spread rumors back on Vasthold.
It won't be so easy here on home. The networks are all apparatus controlled.
She thought for a moment. I think I know a way to get around the apparatus, something I've been saving for a rainy day.
Niles looked puzzled, then a forced smile broke through the heavy cast of his features.
Well, at least I've drummed some little bit of pragmatism into you, Senator.
Tactics, Niles, she corrected.
Let them hear me, and the Emperor will wish he'd died the true death 1,000 years ago.
Adept.
I need to send a message, Zai repeated.
Adept Harper Trebon looked at him, trying to pull her mind into the frantic, empty time of the living. It was so much easier to stare at the walls. Even the flat grey of hypercarbon, so bland compared to sensuous black, was rich and compelling here in the fugue of ongoing reanimation. Trebon's symbiont still labored to bring her back to full animation. Her new heart was not yet whole. The supple cells of the other were doing much of the work, filling in for the tricuspid and mitral valves. Zai's attack had not damaged her brain, but her lungs and spine had been torn mercilessly by his flechettes. The adept was barely alive. When she closed her eyes, the darkness behind them was lit by the red horizon, that first sight of the Risen. Trevum forced herself to look at the man, and through the haze of her fugue she managed to scowl at Zai.
"Leave me alone, Captain. You shoot my heart out, and then expect me to commit treason to repay you."
"The only treason here is the Emperor's," Zai said. The words caused a start from Trevum, bringing the living world into sudden focus.
"Blasphemy!" she spat. "You'll suffer for this, Zai. The tortures you felt on Dantu will be nothing compared to the Emperor's revenge."
"Adept, I need to send a message. Only you can authorize it." Zai spoke as if to an unruly child, repeating his demand with the calm insistence of the rational adult.
"Your crew will join you in your agony, Zai," she said.
Anger crossed his face, and Trevum felt distant amusement. He dared to treat an adept of the apparatus, who had lived 400 subjective years as a child. Even if Zai destroyed her, gave her final darkness, she was one of the honored dead. She would not be frightened or manipulated. His crew. That was Zai's weakness. He had dragged them all into this mutiny with him.
"The apparatus will pull them to pieces, Zai, one by one before your eyes and their families. Traitors all."
The man took a deep breath, then cocked his head and smiled softly.
"I know the Emperor's secret."
A jolt passed through Trevum. Revulsion clenched every muscle in her body. She shook her head reflexively. Zai didn't know. He simply couldn't. The secret was too tightly bound within the world of the apparatus. An uninitiated man, and a living one, could never have discovered it.
"No,"
the adept managed.
"The Rick's prisoner explained it to me."
The words sent another shock through Trevum, a violent seizure that threatened the functioning of her half-repaired heart. A wash of physical, biological pain, something she hadn't felt in decades, coursed down her left arm. Trevum whimpered a little. The other tried to calm her, but the apparatus conditioning was an implacable force, a hurricane that raged inside her very cells. These reactions had been laid down like mineral strata over centuries of service to the Crown, the ultimate stopgap to prevent a member of the apparatus from revealing the secret. But now the pain was being used against her. Trevum swallowed and forced herself to believe her next words.
"You are bluffing, Zai. You know nothing."
"The dead are dying, Adept Trevum."
"Silence!"
she shrieked, her vision disintegrating into a cloud of red. She felt a hideous movement inside. For a moment, the other seemed to retreat from her, its tendrils shrinking from the violent reaction. Adept Trevum understood vaguely the raw science behind the miracle of the symbiont. The other's ability to heal and sustain required absolute acquiescence from the body. The calm remove of the honored dead was a means to keep the body and mind from rejecting the life-sustaining ministrations of the symbiont. The tranquility of the immortals was not merely a spiritual benefit. It was a necessary state. But Trevum's apparatus conditioning warred with her deathly calm, threatening the mesh of body and other. Zai's words could literally tear her in half.
"Silence!" she pleaded, gasping.
Just relinquish the writ, Trevum. Release the writ that binds the communications grid. An action icon hovered before Trevum in second sight. All she had to do was make the sign and Zai would have his access. He could send a message to home. An act of treason. No, Trevum said. The dead are dying, Adept, since the beginning. The pain screamed through her again, and worse than the physical agony was the feeling of the other pulling away, shying from her body's convulsions. Her heart shuddered, almost failing in her chest. You're killing me, Zai! Die, then, the man said. He went on, calmly detailing what the Rix had revealed to him. Adept Trevum fought to control herself, to withstand the pain, to resist the pleas of the other to return things to calm. Once, she saw her hand reach out, about to make the gestural sign that would give Zai what he wanted, but she managed to hold herself back. Then his words continued, and the wrenching punishment of the war inside her resumed. Before her will could crumble, Trevum's half-rebuilt heart stuttered, striking once like a hammer blow in her chest before failing, and the other abandoned her to oblivion. For a moment, the Adept thought she'd won. Her mind began to fade. But horribly, the victory of death calmed her, and the other returned, working its relentless miracle to begin repairs again. Trevum knew, even as consciousness slipped away, that she would reanimate to face these tortures again and again. The symbiont was too powerful, too indomitable and perfect, and her centuries-long conditioning was equally immovable. As she died, Trevum realized that her will, caught between these two indomitable forces, would eventually be destroyed. Sooner or later, she would relent to Zai. Senator. Rarely had she seen the Senate so full. Many planets, Vasthold among them, had only a single senator in the Forum. Winner-take-all, it was called. But the majority of the 80 worlds sent delegations, proportional representations of their constituencies. The voting strength of each world was weighted according to its taxed economic output, and senators from planets with many representatives subdivided their world's votes. The system had been carefully honed to achieve balance over the centuries, but it made for complex vote tabulation. It also led to a crowded great hall on those rare occasions when every senator was present. They were all here now to try Nara Oxum for treason. The Great Forum was a huge pyramidal hole cut into the granite foundation that underlay the capital. Plaster poured into the empty space would have cast a flat-topped pyramid with steps up its four sides. Each of the major parties claimed one of the triangular staircases with their leadership clustered at the point down close to the center, and their rank and file arrayed across the wider rows farther up. The president of the Senate was seated on the low dais, a circular riser of marble in the center of the Great Forum's pit. Senator Oxum had seen the old man, Purim Drexler of Fatawa, seated on the ceremonial dais only once before, when he had given her the oath of office. It was strange to think that in a few days she might be stripped of that office and condemned to death after the votes were counted aloud by the same man. The Great Forum was lit today with a sharp, unreal light that left no shadows against the grey granite floor. That was for the news eyes which lined the high lip of the Forum. Senator Oxum allowed herself a moment of second sight, checking the viewership. On home, the numbers were staggering. 80% of the populace was watching. Even in the antipodal cities, spread from midnight to the early morning hours, a majority were tuned in. Niles had told her that a low-grade translite feed was headed out live through the Imperial Entanglement Repeater network, and a high-grade recording of this trial would eventually reach every world in the 80. The Emperor had never turned Lawrence Zai into the martyr he'd wanted, but at least now he had a villain for his war. The apparatus had done everything possible to inflate viewership of the Oxum trial. Evidently, they were not afraid of her words. She would be allowed to speak in her own defense. Senate President Purim Drexler had insisted on the fullest possible interpretation of the tradition of senatorial privilege, turning back the arguments from his own party about the security of the realm. But even privilege didn't stand up to the 100-year rule, so a compromise had been forged. Purim held a cut-off switch in case Oxum mentioned the Emperor's genocide. The shock collar around her throat reminded Nara to watch her words. Drexler looked a bit pale there on the dais. The apparatus must have briefed him about the nuclear attack the Emperor had proposed, so that Drexler would know when to censor her. Oxum was sure that he had